Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a podcast episode where I answer any question that you can throw at me. Today's question is, if I were sent back in time and I wanted to take over the world, I'm sure that's something that all of us think about a lot, what language would be the most useful? Well, that all depends on what language would be the most useful for you to know. And I teach a course at a local university on history, and I presented a variation of this question to my students. We were looking at the period right before the rise of Islam, about 500 AD or CE, and I wanted to give them some context about what the world was like at this point. And I asked them, if you wanted to take over the Middle East, which the Rashidun Caliphate, the political entity that arose during the time of Muhammad and directly afterward, and basically did take over the Middle East, what language would be the most useful? And I asked some different students in the class, and some thought, well, Latin would be useful because you have to talk to the Pope because he's really powerful in the Middle Ages, right? Or, yeah, Greek would be useful because the Byzantine Empire is powerful. One student said China, which I thought was perceptive because, yeah, China is always the heavyweight of the ancient and medieval world, and the gravity of global trade on the Silk Road is always pulling people east. But I commented that there is a language that is probably the first language spoken by people who get all the way to the shores of the Atlantic and all the way to the Pacific Ocean in China, and in one sense is the first fully Eurasian language. This language is still spoken today, although sadly by a dwindling number of people. It'll probably go extinct in a generation or two. That is the language of Syriac. What's Syriac? Well, it's also known as Syriac Aramaic or Classical Syriac, and it's a dialect of Middle Aramaic. This is a language that was once spoken by most of the people in the Fertile Crescent. The old version of this language became popular when it was adopted by the Neo-Assyrian Empire that existed from 911 to 605 BC, when they conquered various Aramean city kingdoms to its west. And these Arameans were people who played a large part in conquering the old Babylonian Empire. Syriac is a Semitic language, and it's related to Hebrew and Arabic. The characters look quite similar to each other, and you also write from right to left, but it's a little bit simpler in Arabic in some ways. So Syriac was the official language of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, then the Achaemenid Empire, which was a Persian empire from 550 to 330 BC, founded by Cyrus the Great. So yeah, a so-called Persian empire didn't use Persian, they used Aramaic. That's why the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, a lot of it is written in Aramaic because that was the global language, or Syriac if you want to call it that, not Persian. So in the Middle East, up into the 500s, 600s, 700s, Syriac was the global language that would be used to talk from somebody. If you had someone from Byzantium who traveled to Syria and Palestine and Egypt and down into Arabia, the common language of everyone would be in Syriac. There's even some scholarship that suggests that the Quran, the holy book of Muslims, there are some verses which are difficult to decipher, could be better understood if you used Syriac words. Now, a lot of Muslims are not accepting this thesis because they accept that the Quran is the direct word of God revealed to Allah by the angel Gabriel, and it's definitely not being influenced by another language. But anyway, that's what some scholars are saying. Well, Syriac, I mentioned that it was all over the globe. That's because you can find Syriac graffiti up in England left by Roman soldiers who were there. Syriac soldiers were recruited into the Roman Empire. They were also traders. They also went east on the Silk Road. And many Christians who accepted Nestorian Christianity, which is a denomination and used Syriac in its liturgical texts, they went east. They founded monasteries on the Silk Road, and they were traders. They made it all the way out to China. And this language is still operational well into the Mongol period in the 1200s. In fact, there's a gentleman by the name of Rabban Bar Salma, who was a Chinese monk and a diplomat of the Nestorian Church of the East in China. He embarked on a pilgrimage from Mongol-controlled China, spent years in Baghdad, and he was a diplomat representing the Ilkhanate, a daughter state of the Mongols, to Europeans. He went to Rome and he went to France and he wrote a travel account of his adventures in Syriac. He's sort of a reverse Marco Polo. He traveled Europe before Marco Polo returned to Europe and he offers an account of what Europe is like through the eyes of a Chinese person. While Syriac has dwindled in the Middle East, it was largely replaced by Arabic, and scholarship of the church came to favor Latin as a language, although Latin was really nothing important when Syriac was in its prime. And you can still find Christians in Southeast Turkey who speak Syriac, but many of them are forced to speak Turkish as the national language, and they're having difficulty opening their own schools and teaching their own children Syriac, or they're in other countries like Syria, where they're under heavy persecution, or they've moved to Europe or the United States, and many people have assimilated and lost the language of Syriac as their own. But all that to say, if you wanted to know the first global lingua franca, and you wanted to take over the world, and you wanted a common language for lots of different types of people, Syriac was your choice. Well, thank you so much for the question. Before we wrap up, I want to mention a couple of things. First, if you would like to submit a question to me, you can do so by going to historyunpluggedpodcast.com. There you can submit a question in the form of an email, or you can leave a voicemail to me, and I'll play your voicemail on the show. Second, I would like to thank all the wonderful people who have left reviews for this show on iTunes. You as well can leave a review if you go to historyunpluggedpodcast.com. And just a couple of people who've left reviews. One is by Caddy, who left one on July 30th. She said, "Such an easy listen and very interesting. You really do learn something new every day." And that was a 5-star review. Now here is a 2-star review, and I also like positive, constructive feedback. And it said, "Bad answer as to why the African continent has seemingly always been poorer than the rest of the world. This is a great question, and the gentleman is so afraid of being politically incorrect that he fumbles over his own caveats and gets off on a tangent, never answering the question well. He ends by giving isolated examples of wealthy individuals, and these isolated examples have nothing whatsoever to do with the economics of any African country or region." Well, that refers to an early episode on this podcast where I answered the question of why has Africa always been poorer than other continents? As you can imagine, there's a lot of minefields in that question, which I tried to be diplomatic with. And for listeners who respond back to me, I got to say, I love it when they tango with this debate because us history nerds, we love arguing over the details and not just the details, but the interpretation of the details and the implications. So I welcome any reviews that you leave on iTunes and we'll read them on this podcast. So anyway, thank you so much for listening and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site historyonthenet.com and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.